Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane Rehm while she's away on vacation. The iPhone 4 was the most successful product launch in Apple's history. Around the world, there are more than 4 billion, billion mobile phone subscribers, most a little more than Kinect callers. But smartphones, devices that are more computer than traditional phone, are becoming increasingly prevalent. Joining me in the studio to discuss smartphones, dumb phones, and what's next in the world of mobile communications, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal, his work on technology familiar to many of you listeners. Joining us from a studio at WUNC in Durham, North Carolina, Richard Ling. He teaches at the University of Copenhagen. And joining us from a studio in Rancho Bernardo, California, Martin Cooper. And Martin Cooper is the man behind the first portable cell phone when he worked for Motorola many years ago. Welcome to you all. Nice to have you with us on the Diane Rehm Show.
Nice to see you, Steve.
Our email address is old-fashioned email address, drshow@wamu.org. 1-800-433-8850. You can call us using your smartphone, your dumb phone, anything you want to call us on. You can use Semaphore if you can get through. We'd be happy to have you do that. Join our conversation. This is a subject about you. It's about how you communicate. So you give us a call and share your experiences. But, Walt, let's start with some dumb questions. Although an old mentor of mine said there's no such thing as a dumb question.
I agree with that, Steve. What's
the difference between a traditional cell phone and a smartphone?
Well, I'm afraid it's even a little more complicated than that. I think there are three broad, and I stress broad, categories. Mm-hmm. There are what the industry typically calls feature phones, kind of the flip phones usually that you see in cell phone stores. They are mostly built around the idea of making voice calls, although they do have some other features in them. And they often sell for as little as zero as giveaways for the plans, which mm-hmm. are the way that carriers make money. Then there are smartphones, which often have a keyboard, like a full QWERTY keyboard where you can tap out messages. And they have a web browser that's a little easier to use and some other things. But what the iPhone really kicked off...
Is that like a BlackBerry?
I would say most of the older BlackBerries in people's hands, I would call nothing more than a old-fashioned smartphone.
Right.
There are some newer BlackBerries that are a little different and more coming. And then in 2007, with the iPhone's introduction, we began to have what you would really call a full-blown handheld computer. I like to call them super smartphones. They have excellent web browsers. In the case of the iPhone, there are a staggering 225,000 apps, which are just little programs mm-hmm. that you can download to do everything from a traffic navigation to looking up the nearest restaurant to many, many, many tens of thousands of games, lots of even scientific and business things. So those are my sense of the three broad categories. And of those, Steve, by far the fastest growing one, certainly in the developed world, is these super smartphones. Not only iPhones, but phones that are powered by Google's Android operating system. Palm's Web OS operating system, which is now owned by Hewlett-Packard and a number of others.
Is there a significant difference, Walt, between the iPhone and the Android operating system? Are they basically the same, or they?
They're very similar. Uh-huh. I think, without meaning in any way to be demeaning to Google, that the Android system is heavily influenced by the iPhone operating system. They are advanced computer-like operating systems on a small device that can accept large numbers and a wide variety of third-party programs, which are called apps. And so in that sense, they're more – I think if a man from Mars landed and looked at the two of them, he or she would say, well, gee, these are fairly similar.
But yet one of the things that I think was so astounding to so many of us non-techies – you have Apple, this incredibly innovative and creative company, coming out with this new product, which they had to have researched down to the ground. It comes out, and there's a huge flaw in it. it drops calls. How the heck did that happen?
Well, I actually think most of the dropping of the calls on the iPhone is less about the phone, although it's something, part of it is about the phone, but it's less about the phone and much more about the network. Mm-hmm. The networks we have in the United States and even in other countries currently are at a stage called 3G. They are moving to a stage called 4G, and we can talk about that if you want. But the networks were really designed around voice. They do data and all of this other stuff, web browsing, mm-hmm. email, apps, is all lumped under data. But they were really designed way back in their draft stages around voice calls. The truth is that people with these super smartphones, and it's very hard to generalize, but I think many, many people with these super smartphones make many fewer voice calls than they did 10 years ago, and they're doing huge amounts of data. AT&T, which is the sole carrier.
And the network really just can't support that.
That's what I was about to say. The AT&T, in many countries, by the way, the iPhone and phones like this run on multiple carriers. In the U.S., it's only AT&T, and I can explain why if you want. But so AT&T has taken the brunt of this, and they have charts that show that since the introduction of the iPhone, their data traffic on their network has increased 5,000%. And every time you are doing a data action, for instance,
They're victimized by their own popularity in some
yes.
ways.
Yes. I mean, let me just explain one thing, and you have other experts who could probably even do a better job than this. If I'm watching the home run, a video of the home run in the Nationals game, hoping there was a home run last night on my iPhone, which I can easily do, X number of voice calls simply cannot get through on that cell tower because the amount of capacity that video
Fair
takes
point.
Is huge.
I want to bring in Marty Cooper, who was present 1973, I believe, Marty, at the first cell phone call. First of all, I want you to describe it, and second of all, I want your reaction to this world that Walt Mossberg has just been describing. Did you, sitting there on that street corner in New York in 1973 when you made the first phone call, did you have any sense at all of the kind of world that Walt just described?
Well, of course. Well, first of all, you should know that I was not sitting because the whole concept of personal portable phones is people are mobile. People mm-hmm. are always moving around. And we were, in fact, walking down the street in New York with a journalist just like you, Steve. I made a phone call. I actually ended up calling my competitor at AT&T, who somehow didn't agree. He thought cell phones ought to be car phones. And we had violent disagreement about that. I told them I was calling him from a real cell phone, a personal portable cell phone. And yes, the answer is yes.
That must have been a delicious moment.
It was very satisfying. And we knew then, Steve, that someday everybody would have a phone. You know, we had a joke that someday in the future, when you were born, you would be assigned a telephone number. And if you didn't answer the phone, you had died. However, if you think about the fact that even 10 years later, a handheld telephone cost, in 1983, $4,000, it was a little stretch for us to imagine that within our lifetime you'd be able to, as Walt says, get a phone for nothing. But I wonder if I could comment on all the things that Steve talked or that Walt talked about.
Hold on. I'll give you a chance to do that because we're going to have to take a break before too long. I want to get Richard Ling in here before we take the break. Richard, this world that Walt describes, it is the super smart phone user who downloads the home run for the Nationals. But around you, you're an expert on worldwide use. And really around the world, the smartphone is still a relatively small part of the business.
Yeah, that's true. I was running some numbers just on the number of iPhones as compared to those 4 billion, and it's even beyond that now. And iPhones make up only a very, very small percent of that. You know, there are a broad reach of different kinds of phones. There's HTCs, there's Blackberries, there's all different kinds. But if you look at worldwide basis, there's a whole lot of not even feature phones, but they're just basic phones that you can, you know, call or maybe send a text with. In fact, in places like Bangladesh, there are many people that don't even have a phone. They just have a SIM card. In, you know, outside the U.S., people have just a chip that they put into a phone. And people just get a SIM card, and their neighbor perhaps has a phone. And if they want to make a call, they go over to the neighbor, put the SIM card in the phone, make the call, and maybe pay him a little bit for the charging of the battery afterwards. So there's a whole variety, all the way from that extremely basic idea of not even having the phone, but just having the subscription, all the way to these super-duper wonders, these
but
know,
Richard, there are
devices.
I gather, though, for all of the fancy doodads Walter was describing, that in a number of countries there's a larger cell phone penetration even in the United States, countries like Korea.
Oh, yeah, Korea and I think Taiwan, many European countries. There's, you know, there's some weird counting going on, but I think Taiwan is up towards, what, 180 or so telephones per 100 population, which is, you know, a bizarre statistic because that's counting everybody from the newborns all the way up to the older people. And so, you know, something weird is going on in terms of the subscriptions. People may have several different subscriptions. Quite often in third world countries, you'll have a subscription that works in the city, another one that works outside the city, one that's cheaper during the daytime, one's that's cheaper at nighttime. You know, there's a whole variety of different things going on there.
That's Richard Ling, a professor at the IT University in Copenhagen, Walt Mossberg from The Wall Street Journal, Marty Cooper, who is the creator of the first portable cell phone, is all with us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane. We'll get back with your comments and your calls. Stay here. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away on vacation. Our subject is cell phones, smartphones, dumb phones. By the way, we've gotten a lot of callers saying they're listening to the show on their smartphone, which is something you probably would not have heard even a year or two ago. Walt Mossberg, Wall Street Journal technology columnist, is with me. Also, Richard Ling on the phone from the University of Copenhagen, and Marty Cooper is in California at Rancho Bernardo, and he is the man behind the first portable cell phone. You can call us, 1-800-433-8850, drshow at wamu.org is our email. Of course, you can also, we're on Facebook and Twitter. Marty Cooper, you wanted to comment on some of the issues that Walt raised, and I'm particularly interested in, as someone who was there at the beginning, do you think that give me your take on a lot of these innovations. I gather that one of your concerns is that the modern cell phone has become almost too complicated and too difficult to use.
Well, those are two different things.
Okay.
Complicated is good. I want the absolute best technology supporting me, but I don't want it to be hard to use. The fact is, yes, cell phones are harder to use than they should be. Walt's description of these different categories was, of course, accurate. Having a lot of complexity in a phone is not a bad thing. And in fact, let me describe an ideal phone to you. My ideal phone is a phone that does nothing else but make phone calls. And I want that phone to understand me, to know exactly what I want, and to not require any actions on my part. If I want to talk to you, Steve, I would say to my phone, which may be embedded under my skin, I would say, get me Steve. And the phone would say to me, Steve who? And I say, get me the Steve in NPR in Washington. And they say, okay. And next thing you know, I'm talking to you. The technology it would take to achieve that is far greater than any smartphone that exists today, because that computing power is enormous. So the real issue is how easy it is for us to access this technology. Mm-hmm. And technology ought to be transparent, invisible, or at least intuitive. And most phones are not today. You were right when you mentioned before, or Walt mentioned, that the iPhone did establish, did some breakthroughs in that area. But the fact that we talk about apps, what's an app? We want phones to make our lives more convenient. And the fact that there are 300,000 apps on the iPhone and 70,000 on Android is irrelevant to me. I want the phone to do the things that make my life better. I don't even want to think about how to find those things. They ought to find me. And that's what the problem we face today is. Somehow or other, the engineers who have created these phones are working very hard to make the interfaces convenient. But what they're really trying to do is turn us all into engineers. And I resist that. I object to that. I don't think we ought to be engineers. We ought to work on the things that we enjoy and let them figure out how to bring these technologies to us.
Richard Ling, what's your take on this issue? Are this next generation of smartphones with thousands of apps too complicated? Or do you like the whole system?
You know, the iPhone's sort of an interesting transition, because previous to the iPhone, when you bought a phone, a lot of the programs, a lot of the stuff was pretty much programmed into it.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, with some of the more advanced ones, you could download things and so on. But with the iPhone, it's almost like tabula rasa. You can download whatever you want. I was in a focus group not long ago, and there was one of the people there that said, you know, an iPhone, it's like a Christmas present. You can go looking and find a little surprise every day, and it doesn't cost that much.
Hmm.
You know, something that's useful, something that's not useful, something that's fun, something that's not what you thought it was. But, you know, there's just that idea of I can get a little present every day. And so it's made the mobile phone into a very much of an it's odd to say it because Apple is a very integrated organization, but it's in some ways an open system. You can make your device into what it is that you want it to be.
I saw this.
But after
Please go ahead.
But after you've said that, you know, I've looked at the statistics in terms of the number of what people do with their phones in terms of communication, not necessarily the onboard stuff, but in terms of the communication. And with traditional phones, 90% of the stuff you do is talking and texting. In other words, you know, there's a lot of other stuff there. There's calendars, there's cameras, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. But 90% of the stuff that people do in terms of communication, at least, is talking and texting. If you talk about iPhones and these other advanced phones, the Android phones, you know, that it's true that there's a lot more other surfing and internet traffic that goes on in relation to those. So that, and again, it's a break, yeah.
Well, you know, when you say everybody adapts this phone to their own use, I was recently meeting with a former student of mine, a young mother, and she had her small child with her, Walt, and she just handed this child her phone, and it became the babysitter. I mean,
absolutely.
This child just played games while we talked. I had never seen that before. But give me your – I want each of you to tell me what device you use and sort of how you use it, and then we'll ask our listeners how they do it.
Well, let me just comment on that babysitter thing. It's extremely common, and it goes back to what Richard said, which is it can be a different thing every day and every week. And I think it's a true, genuine pleasure. I respect how can you not respect Martin and certainly what he said, but I respectfully disagree. I don't want my phone, the thing I carry around, to be primarily about making voice calls. To me, that's just a service among many other services that the phone does. So to your question, I my personal phone is an iPhone. I have an iPhone 4. Because I review technology products, I also have right now in my home for a temporary period a BlackBerry that is yet to be released. And by the way, this BlackBerry will be a major effort to move them toward Android and iPhone from their more staid approach. I have two Android phones. And Martin knows that I have had and used a phone with which he's been associated called the Jitterbug, which is primarily a voice phone and a one that was very carefully designed to be extremely easy to use. So I use all these phones all the time. But my personal phone is an iPhone 4, and it probably doesn't look in terms of the apps and the way I use it like the next person's iPhone.
Give me one or two examples of apps that are you've used in the last 24 hours.
The Major League Baseball app, YouTube, of course, the phone calling app, because I do make some phone calls, texting, email, huge amount of email, Twitter, Facebook. These are apps on the iPhone, and iBooks, and Amazon Kindle also. Don't need a physical Kindle device to read Kindle books. You can read them on an iPad, an Android phone, an iPhone. And so when I had 5 or 10 minutes waiting in line somewhere, I read 8 or 10, 12, whatever it is, pages of the novel I'm reading, and then I resumed it at home on a bigger screen, a more readable device.
Interesting. Marty Cooper, what are you using these days?
Well, of course, I have a different phone every couple of months because people keep asking me that question. And right now I'm using a Motorola Droid X, which I like very much because it has a huge screen. But, Walt, we don't disagree. I never said, even though, by the way, thank you for mentioning the Jitterbug, that I think people only want phones. I just want all of these features that we talk about to be very easy to use and easy to access. So do I like my Droid X? Yes. The last application I used, you want to talk about high tech? It's called a flashlight.
Oh, I have one of those, too, on my
I knew you did, Walt. There was no question in my
mind.
In
fact, I just interject and say that my wife switched to the iPhone over the weekend, and one of the very – she doesn't want too many apps, or she says she doesn't want too many apps, but I downloaded the flashlight one for her just for security.
Yeah, good. Richard Ling, what are you using?
I've got the Model T of this crowd here. I've got an HTC Touch Pro. Which is, I think, about 2 years old. I'm thinking about asking my boss for a new one, but I haven't gotten up the guts to do that yet.
I have to admit here that I have by far the oldest of them. This is an old Motorola. It's just a flip phone. I don't use any. It takes pictures, and I've never done it. But I'll tell you, the dimension of it that I most like is the Bluetooth technology and being able to drive and make calls and still actually watch the road and hold the steering
wheel. Well, every phone that we've mentioned here has that. That's almost table stakes.
I told you it was pretty outmoded. I want to bring in some of our listeners here. And here's an email from Lisa. What an exciting conversation, especially to learn the first cell phone call was in my birth year. I am listening to your program on my smartphone that has a radio function, and it gets better reception than the real radio sitting on my desk. It also has a podcast function, an MP3, along with the standards like camera phone, web access, lots of apps, etc. Yay for technology. Now they just need to make these suckers waterproof, like 100%, and I'll be in business. Marty, your reaction to Lisa?
Well, of course, but once again, Lisa, don't you really want these things to be easy to find? You know, my Droid X is fantastic. I mean, I really like it. But I tried to take a picture the other day, and I pushed the button, and there I have on my screen exactly what I want to take, and I couldn't find the click button. I didn't know what to push. So here's a question of things being not being as intuitive as they should be. I know they're going to fix that. I'm going to go look at the manual. But why should we ever need a manual? The manual.
There's a concept. You're going to go look at the manual?
Yeah, right. the manual on most of these phones is bigger and heavier than the phone itself. Exactly. So it's only a question of their being intuitive. And by the way, I do use Twitter as well, Walt, and I am Marty Mobile, if anybody wants to
That's a great handle,
Twitter
Marty.
Me. thanks, Walt.
And well-deserved.
Here's Peter from Tarrytown, New York, a question you raised earlier, Walt. If everyone got smart and super smart phones and utilized them as they intend, do we have enough bandwidth to support them?
Steve, I honestly, and let me preface this by saying I am certainly not a network engineer, but I talk to some network engineers on a regular basis and also to people at the FCC, and I think at the moment we don't. If everyone, as Richard said, you know, iPhones, and I will put some words into his mouth, iPhones, Android phones, phones of that type, yeah. Super smartphones, are a tiny percentage of all the phones in the world. If somehow overnight everyone got these kinds of phones, we'd be screwed on bandwidth. What you're seeing with drop calls on the iPhone would just look like a picnic. So what the carriers are doing is trying to move to what's called 4G, which is a kind of network that it is designed actually with these things in mind. It's more internet-based and so forth, without sacrificing voice calling. The problem is you still – spectrum is limited by the laws of physics, and you're still going to have crowding in cell towers, particularly in cities where people are going to have a lot of these phones and do a lot of data. So I think we're in I interviewed Julius Genachowski, the head of the FCC, a couple of months ago at a conference I run, and he said I think we're in for a few – at least difficult years on that.
Interesting point.
But Walt,
Marty, hold on just one second. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Go ahead.
Walt, obviously you're not aware of the law of spectral efficiency, which I'm embarrassed to say sometimes is called Cooper's Law. But the ability to squeeze more information through the spectrum has been doubling every 2.5 years for the past 110 years. The technology exists to keep that going for at least another 50 or 60 years. So the challenge is for the carriers to use that new technology. And there have
are they doing
been,
it, Marty?
Nope, they are absolutely not. They have not been very motivated until, guess what, the iPhone. And all of a sudden, spectral efficiency became important, and they are working on those technologies, but the technologies exist, and they are being used in many other countries and many other technologies.
Go on to another email here, and I want to bring Richard Ling in. Why is AT&T the only provider for iPhone in the U.S.? Do you anticipate it changing? Walt pointed out that in Europe it's a very different system. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, in Europe, the regulation took a little bit different turn than it did in the U.S. With the idea of separating the handset manufacturers and the carriers, which resulted in the SIM card system. So when you subscribe to a carrier, and actually almost any place else in the world, think aside from Japan, North Korea, and the U.S., I'm probably wrong on that, but that's my assumption.
You mean South Korea, right?
Yes, South Korea. I'm sorry. Yes, when you subscribe, you get what's called a SIM card, a little chip, and then you can go off and buy whatever phone you want. There is some locking of phones at different times. For example, if you get a good deal on a phone, then it's locked to a system for a certain amount of time. But you're free to shift that SIM card between phones, and indeed, people do that quite often. For example, if I were to drop my phone in the water, in the toilet, for example, and it ruined it, I could take the SIM card out, dry that off, and put it in one of the old phones that I have in the drawer and carry on, talking in that. And we see from the records, the traffic records, that people do that quite often.
You want to add something?
Yeah, there's a much more direct – Richard is right, by the way, and this is a whole other show, why we came to the system we have in the U.S., but the iPhone case is a special case. Traditionally in the United States, and I would say in other countries as well, but especially in the United States, the carriers, who after all are not designers of devices, they may be very good at network operations, though Martin cast doubt about that, but they're certainly not great designers of software and hardware and devices, but they insisted on having a heavy hand in the design of the phones and the software on the phones, and it wasn't a very happy situation. Steve Jobs, being Steve Jobs, said, I'm going to make a phone. I know about hardware and software. People might buy it, they might not, but I'm going to put it on the market without any interference from the carrier. And so a deal was made. AT&T said, we'll go along with that. We'll break with our tradition, but you got to give us a long exclusive on the phone, and that is why.
It's Walt Mossberg from the Wall Street Journal. I'll be back with your calls, however you want to call us. Smoke signals are fine. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Matthew Weiner, creator of the AMC series Mad Men. He says many of the lines from the show come from real life, like one by Don Draper's mistress.
And she says to him, I like being bad and then going home and being good. Someone said that to me on an airplane.
Mad Men returns for its fourth season Sunday. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away on vacation. My subject this hour, cell phones, smartphones, dumb phones, all of the innovations in mobile technology. Walt Mossberg is with me. He writes about this very subject for the Wall Street Journal. Also, Richard Ling. He teaches at the University of Copenhagen as an international expert. And joining me on the phone from Rancho Bernardo, California, Martin Cooper, who is the man behind the first portable cell phone, but also has been involved in developing some very modern technologies, including a cell phone system called Jitterbug, which I think is designed primarily for older people and is designed, Marty, as I understand it, to be particularly easy to use. And you can join our conversation, 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. And I want to give some of our listeners a chance, but I want to read this email that just came in. Just wanted to let you know that I'm listening to the show live from Bangkok. I'm an expat here. I've traveled to 10 countries this year. Along the way with my phone and iPhone has been indispensable for language translation, maps, snapping photos, among other things. Having said that, seeing the lack of etiquette that often accompanies mobile phone use is disturbing. I have a theory that this is especially bad in places where landline penetration was historically minimal. This isn't intended as a disparaging remark, but rather as an observation of how we adapt to technology. And, of course, the tagline says, sent from mobile device. Richard Ling, your view about this question of cell phone etiquette.
You know, ever since I've started studying this, and I've been studying it for 10, 15 years now, when you have a focus group or when you start talking to people, that's one of the first things that always comes up, is that it's changed the way of face-to-face interaction. It's always being interrupted. And when you think about the concept of etiquette from sort of a broader perspective, etiquette, the rules of etiquette and courtesy are basically about face-to-face interactions. You know, how do you eat your soup? Who stands in line at the wedding? You know, what's the reception line order? All those sorts of things. If you look at any etiquette book, it's full of face-to-face types of things. And there's a little section about how you answer the phone, but not a whole lot. So the mobile phone has really changed the way that we interact on an interpersonal basis. In a lot of ways, it privileges our closest sphere of friends. We did an analysis of who calls or how many different numbers people text to or call to. And half the calls go to three or four or five numbers, different numbers.
And the companies have been marketing that, you know, the notion of your circle of friends. And
But you know, so that says that the phone is very much a device of the intimate sphere of our closest friends and our closest family. And so in some ways, it privileges that group access to us whenever and wherever. I was having a focus group down in Atlanta several months ago. And during the focus, this was with teenage girls, and I noticed the girl sitting off to the right to me. She had her phone on her lap. And, you know, when she wasn't involved in the conversation, she was checking for texts and she was texting. And so being a focus group about mobile phones, I got to ask, you know, what's going on here? You know, what are you doing? Well, I'm just arranging what we're going to do afterwards. You know, some of my friends are going to meet at a certain place, and we just had to figure out where that was. Went around the table. Everybody, almost all the girls at that focus group were doing that. So it really sort of breaks down the whole idea of here and now and who becomes privileged in interactions. Mm-hmm. And that ruffles people's hair.
What's your take on this, Walt? I remember even a few years ago seeing signs in European restaurants before that they were popular here, big cell phones with slashes through them.
Right.
I was just on Amtrak the other night and in the quiet car, and someone was talking on her cell phone, and three people got up and said, "Stop it. This is a quiet car." So this issue of etiquette is really an interesting one.
Yeah, and as with everything in human behavior, it's going to take some time to evolve. Mm-hmm. I have a friend named Linda Stone, who some of you may have heard of, who studies some of these things, and she calls this continuous partial attention. In other words, and it goes for laptops as well as cell phones. And, of course, the more capability in the mobile phone or super smartphone, the more difficult this is. That is, you're constantly distracted. You're constantly drawn away to do some other thing or have some other form of communication. And instead of paying attention to what's going on right in front of you. And, you know, I like technology and I write about it, but that doesn't mean I think people ought to be rude to each other. And so my advice is you have to be analog. You have to be analog some of the time and when it's appropriate.
But Walt, it doesn't take a cell phone to make people rude, right?
That's right.
No, they've been rude before cell phones, no doubt about that. And they've been polite before cell phones, too. Let's talk to Julie John in Burke, Virginia. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show. Julie John?
Hello? Yeah, that's me. Hi. I would really like to get a smartphone, especially for the internet capabilities, but I am scared to death. I've had my computer hacked several times, and so what's to keep? I see no software or apps for virus protection or anything. You know, is that coming, or is, you know, because I've got friends here, since I'm in the Northern Virginia just outside of 495, a lot of people have government-issued BlackBerries and whatnot, and I'm scared to death of hackers.
Okay, good question, Walt.
Hi. The answer is it's coming. It's actually already here. There are some programs you can buy, and these are apps. You can put them on iPhones and Android phones and BlackBerries that do antivirus. But I will say that the accumulated evidence that we know of so far, I want to stress, is that there isn't really a particularly big problem yet. There have been a lot of theoretical showings at conferences and in labs that you can break into these things. And sometimes even on the network level, AT&T had a break-in on their network level. Hmm. But it's not anything remotely approaching the problem that people have with Windows computers yet.
Okay, let me bring in Martha from Indian Mound, Tennessee. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you. I have a couple of issues. One, I live in an area that has no cell phone access, and I've come to see that as a blessing because it seems to me that with all the emphasis on instant connectivity and instant this and instant that, if we're not careful, it's going to be mandatory to suffer from attention deficit disorder. And I see this as totally trashing our ability to concentrate on something for any length of time. It interferes with our consciousness of our surroundings, which can be important. And so I see this as a blessing, and I think that the whole thing dumbs us down because we don't have to know anything. All we have to know is which button to push. Another issue is I'm not as young as I used to be, and cell phones have screens that are too small, buttons that are too small, and if I can't see it, if I can't see the thing while I have my driving glasses on, it's not worth a bother. Plus, all our phones are hitched to the wall, and I know where they all are, so they don't get lost. But and it really appalls me that a person can't even amuse a child without a cell phone. Plus, I have concerns about the issue of whether or not they cause cancer, because I don't want to see the various government or any insurance programs swamped by a bunch of cancers that are coming down the road in about 10 years. As I say, I'm older than dirt, but I do expect to live another 30 years.
Well, Martha, let me. You've asked about three questions, and I want to get you answers to all of them. So we really appreciate your calling. Marty, start with the question that she raised about attention deficit, and a number of people have already raised this question. She's glad that she doesn't live in an area with cell phones. What's your reaction to her comment?
Well, I actually feel a little sorry for this lady because think of the safety aspects. If she gets in trouble and she's not near a phone, she can't reach anybody. And the idea that in today's age that you are isolated any place is just objectionable. So, yes, there are trade-offs, but in general, the trade-offs lean very heavily toward having people in touch. The attention deficit thing, that's a matter of choice. Every cell phone comes with an on-off switch. You can ignore the cell phone if you want. People have made that decision, and for the most part, I think they benefit from that decision. And by the way, this lady ought to look at a jitterbug because she can read a jitterbug without her glasses.
And what's the we know that you've been deeply involved, you and your wife both, in creating the jitterbug, but what is the innovative dimension to it? Is it simply bigger screen, bigger buttons, or what have you done to make it easier to use?
Not at all. It is building a whole system that is simple and intuitive. As an example, when you open up a jitterbug and put it up to your ear, you get a dial tone. If there's a signal. If there's no signal, there's no dial tone. No reading a manual to decide what bars are. So the whole experience of using a jitterbug is just very easy. You don't ever have to look at a manual. Would you believe there is a button that's labeled on-off? You don't have to push the on button to turn the radio on, which you do with every other cell phone.
My goodness, what a concept. What will they think of next? Richard Ling, I want you to deal with the final point that our caller made. Which is out there. I mean, that is the potential for impairing people's health by excessive cell phone use. Is there evidence that this any evidence that this exists?
You know, I'm a sociologist, and so I am. Every time an article comes down saying there's an article comes down that says there isn't. It's so I don't have any final knowledge of that. But it seems like that question is very much contested. So I really don't want to go there. But comment I do want to make associated with her is that the whole idea of sort of being in the moment for the co-located situation. Because in some respects, we're starting to see a society which says that you become a problem for me if you don't have a phone. In other words, if I want to invite all of you guys out to a beer for a beer, and one of you doesn't have a phone, then we have to come up with some sort of a workaround to get in touch with Walt. Could you give him a call, Steve, so that we could all get together? So you sort of take yourself out of the loop socially by deciding not
and,
to have
and
a
that
phone.
And I must say, as someone who teaches college, that is certainly truer and truer of younger people. I mean, their entire social network is based on everybody having a mobile device. And
well, that's brilliant, Richard. You're accusing this lady of being rude, and I think you're right.
I'm Steve Roberts.
Okay.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Walter, we got an email. We were talking about ethics and, you know, and behavior. And this is an anonymous email who says, I can't believe how many men use cell phones while using public restrooms.
Yeah. it's interesting. I had a conversation with a woman technologist not long ago about that. And for reasons we don't have to graphically describe here, it's easier for a man in a public restroom in some circumstances to hold a phone. And I've seen that, and I've seen it done by some pretty famous technology leaders. that anonymous writer is correct. Although I will say, emails that come from anonymous writers raise their own ethical questions, you know. But
we got time for one or two more callers, and let's try to get to Jim here. Thanks for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show, Jim.
Yes, good morning. Excellent show, Steve.
Thanks.
I think that to put the super smartphones in perspective, we need to look at the history of the last 20 years and talk a little bit about convergence. Mobile sales professionals at one time, myself included, carried paper planners, digital pagers. We looked for every parking lot had a AT&T phone that we could call our customers and call our offices for. Mm-hmm. And then we moved forward to the bag phone era, and the first portable cell phone I had was as big as a World War II walkie-talkie. And with the arrival of the Palm Pilot, when we could then digitally collect information on our customers to better deliver goods and services, we still had a bag full of electronic devices, and we were all clamoring for a convergence, a phone, a planner, mm-hmm. a pager. We moved forward, and there were many, many experiments, and I was an early adopter of many, many of the technologies that, quite honestly, were total flops. I would include the early Palm phone/organizers as total flops. They just didn't work well. But manufacturers continue to listen to their...
Jim, I don't mean to interrupt you. We only have about a minute left, so if you could pose a question for our guests, I'd appreciate it.
The question is, as exciting as the iPhone 4 is now, where are we going? And I guess I'd direct that to Walt Mossberg.
Well, that's a good last question. Where are we going, Walt?
We're going onward and upward, Steve. Marty is right that it has to remain easy to use. I personally do not believe the iPhone or the Android phones are hard to use, although I think the iPhone's a little easier to use. But Android is improving fast. I think one way place we're going is to see ubiquity in connectivity. And I'm not talking about voice calls particularly. You see it in the Kindle, which has built-in cellular connectivity, and you can get a book in a minute.
Right.
You see it in the iPad, which has taken off like nothing else I've ever seen. I mean, you know, it's like 3 months old and they've sold almost 3.5 million.
In the airport yesterday and, you know, I saw a dozen people using them.
And that has either Wi-Fi, which, you know, connects it, or you can get it with 3G cellular. So I think you're going to see a whole morphing of different kinds of devices and different kinds of functionality running over these networks. And again, the networks are going to have to get more robust, maybe through Marty's law, maybe through something else.
Final word, Marty, about where we're going.
The real revolution is going to happen in healthcare. The fact that we can now connect our bodies to computers and to doctors on a continuing basis, we can measure everything on the human body. The future of wireless is going to be revolutionizing healthcare because we're going to be able to anticipate and prevent disease instead of doing what we do today, curing disease.
Marty, that's going to have to be the last word, and thank you so much for joining us. Marty Cooper, the creator of the first cell phone, joining us from California. Richard Ling, professor at the IT University of Copenhagen. And Walt Mossberg, author and creator of the weekly personal technology column in the Wall Street Journal. It's been appearing every Thursday since 1991. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away on vacation. And thank you, all of you, whatever you're listening to us on, whatever you're calling us on, thanks for spending the hour with us.